Welcome back, ladies and germs, to another episode of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms, joined as always by my good friend and co-host Tyler O. And today we are going to dig into the wide receiver position and go over some of the landscape notes that we have for this position for dynasty purposes, for even just 2026 season-long fantasy purposes, and some real-life football purposes. It's a fun position. Some of the brightest stars in the NFL play receiver, and these are cornerstone assets for a lot of our fantasy teams. So look, if you are out there and you're thinking, man, I need to make some big moves this offseason, who are some guys I need to target? Who are some guys maybe I should look to avoid a little bit? Hey, we're going to lay the foundation for that conversation today on the program. But before we start with some of the bigger names that we have to discuss, Tyler, how are you doing? And how did you enjoy the Super Bowl?
Super Bowl was solid. I would say not the most exciting Super Bowl for the people I was with, aka my wife. She usually likes to see a lot of offense, and it was a very defensive focused game, but it was good to see the Seattle defense absolutely shellack the Pats. I mean, it was not even close, folks. I know most of you watched at this point in time, but hey, it was it signals the end of the season. We are officially looking ahead to the 2026 year with 2025 completely behind us. And I guess the other kind of shifting gears here, you know, it's interesting. We're talking about these dynasty ranks. They're going to change, folks. It is only the beginning of February. There's no doubt that as Herms and I move along the season, these dynasty ranks will change and shift, ebb and flow. Heck, we might even make some changes live on the show. But what's important is we're thinking about it. We're constantly thinking about ways that we can win, that we can get you information that you can win, that we can find the edges, that we can really just send home those championships when it matters most. And that starts now in February, believe it or not, Herm. So I'm ready to get chatting here about these wide receivers.
1000%, baby. And like I was saying earlier, some of these receivers are key cornerstones of delivering those championships. Look no further than our real life example, the Seattle Seahawks being led by Jackson Smith and Jigba. He makes a huge presence on that team, makes a huge presence on fantasy teams as well. And there is another guy pretty high up there in what most consider to be the elite tier, a player that we will start our discussion with, Mr. CeeDee Lamb of the Dallas Cowboys, and his teammate, George Pickens. Now, this, you know, saying that assumes that George Pickens resigns with the Cowboys after being acquired from the Steelers last offseason, went out there, had an absolutely electric year. Dude, Lamb and Pickens put together something very special this past season, working with Dak Prescott in this offense. I think it would be absolutely ludicrous if this front office did not extend George Pickens long term. But I do think that that relative ambiguity is part of the reason why people are pretty bullish on him in the dynasty streets, but maybe not where he could be if we had a sort of definitive answer for where he was going to be in 2026 and beyond. And, you know, with CeeDee Lamb, you know, what do you really have to say? He's CeeDee freaking Lamb. We've seen him do it year in, year out, time and time again. I am curious to hear from you where you have each of these guys ranked and also kind of how you feel about the future of the Dallas Cowboys offense, assuming that we get this duo running it back moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, generally, I feel great about this offense moving forward. I mean, it's high flying. They're throwing the hell out of the ball. Dak Prescott's looking great. For me, CeeDee Lamb is still going to be the clear leader here. There's definitely some rumbling, some conversations in the season, and I expect that rumblings and conversation to leak over now to dynasty season where people are putting George Pickens ahead of CeeDee Lamb. I think that's a bit ludicrous, if you ask me. For me, CeeDee Lamb is a tier above in terms of talent. He also is way more consistent. And the thing about George Pickens is while you could argue the talent is there, there's just such a level of inconsistency with how he goes out and attacks the game, how he plays. I mean, CeeDee Lamb isn't out there quitting and plays. Like, very few wide receivers can get away with that, and Pickens does it. I mean, he's clearly a talented guy, but it gives me some concern, put it that way. So, you know, they're very talented, but you also got to keep in mind that Lamb missed three games this past season, and that's part of the reason he finished all the way down at wide receiver 20. In fact, it was his worst finish since his rookie season. But what keeps me on Lamb is, you know, when he wasn't hurt, he finished wide receiver 1 overall in 2023. wide receiver 6 overall in 2022, and he missed a couple games and was still wide receiver 8 in 2024. There's just a level of consistency that CeeDee Lamb's going to get you in this offense that I think I can't get away from. He feels really good right now at wide receiver 6 for me. Neighbors and Amon-Ra St. Brown sit right around him. Now, that is a tough conversation, as I really see them in that second tier, and it feels really, really good. But he's there at wide receiver 6 for me. So before I shift any kind of pickings and where I have him, curious as to where you're seeing Lamb right now and where you might have him ranked personally.
I have always been really big on CeeDee Lamb, to the point that I was once very obnoxious about it once upon a time, to the point that I have CeeDee Lamb firmly entrenched in my top 5 basically forever. I have him as my wide receiver 4. He is, for my money, like my vote for best receiver in the NFL. I really think he just has all of those skills, the versatility to line up inside and out and dominate on both, you know, parts of the field or whatever. And he's just an absolute dynamo. So that's kind of where I have CeeDee Lamb.
So I'll start it with Pickens. Pickens is wide receiver 13 for me. I expect to be lower than the market on Pickens, and I'm completely fine with that. Part of that's because he finished wide receiver 39, wide receiver 30, and wide receiver 42 before finishing as a wide receiver 5 last year. A lot of that has to do with the situation, but also CeeDee Lamb missed 3 games. So I just think it might be a little bit of an outlier to call him a top 10 option. I'm not there yet. I wouldn't be surprised if he's towards the bottom of that, but I'm really comfortable with the names ahead of him. That Pickens for me is just a fringe wide receiver 1, top of wide receiver 2. But you know, I'd almost guarantee that the Keep Trade Cup market's got him a little higher than that. But we'll see. I've been surprised before.
As we have been doing for the better part of this, you know, ongoing series that we're doing, breaking down position by position, are you curious now to hear where our good friends over at Keep Trade Cut have CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens? When it comes to Pickens, they have him all the way at wide receiver 10. I think that's, I get why. I personally have Pickens at wide receiver 9, although that's largely based on the assumption that he's staying in Dallas, doing the whole thing, and that, you know, his attitude or whatever is not going to continue to be a problem moving forward. Because that was a little blip on the radar. I really think he showcased a lot of growth this past year in Dallas, if you look at the season on the whole. And then when it comes to our friend CeeDee Lamb, he is at wide receiver 7, a lot closer to where you have him. But I mean, look, I have come out and said there's a reason why I am obnoxiously high on CeeDee Lamb, because I always have been, and why give up now? But I think it makes a lot of sense. But the wide receiver 10 for Pickens, though, I mean, there's definitely a bit of a gap between you and there. Is there something that could happen that would make you feel a little bit more comfortable paying wide receiver 10 prices, or for a Keep Trade Cut, the equivalent trade value of an early 2027 first round rookie pick?
A little rich for my blood, Herms, there with that early 2027 rookie pick. What would make me feel better? A long contract with the Dallas Cowboys and seeing him put up another top 15 season. That's what it would take for me to get that high, Herms.
Now, shifting gears over to one of the guys that I had to bring to the table for this conversation, Ladd McConkey of the Los Angeles Chargers is somebody that I think is extremely interesting. Now, a lot has happened with the Chargers since the end of the season, namely offensive coordinator Mike McDaniel being named to be the guy coming in, replacing Greg Roman, bringing a very dynamic element to this offense. Everybody knows the type of system that they tried to run down there in Miami with Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle. And hey, look, you know, when Tua was fully healthy and firing for the limited windows in which he was, it was pretty fun to watch. So if you take that and retrofit it somehow over what we have with Justin Herbert, McConkey, teammates Quentin Johnston, young tight end Aronde Gaston, I think it's going to be pretty fun. But I still think there are a lot of people who are burned by what happened with the Chargers and McConkey specifically last year. And look, I get it. Through the first 2 months of the season, they were absolutely just soaring balls through the air at a consistent rate. The 61.4% pass rate ranked 5th in the NFL and shattered the clip of 55.1% from the season prior from the Chargers. So we have seen a version of this offense that can go out there and really make things happen with their pass catchers. But from week 9 onward, it got a little bit gross. The offensive line became a bit of a problem, considering that Joe Alt re-aggravated a high ankle sprain, went down for the remainder of the year, and it just crumbled. And Herbert's time to throw became a huge concern. His sack rate went up. And as a result, Ladd McConkey went from averaging 8.5 targets per game over the first 2 months of the season, ranking as the wide receiver 32 with 15.6 PPR points per game, all the way down to 4.8 targets and only averaging 12.1 PPR points per game. It doesn't sound that good. I know. Wide receiver 32, even during this peak time period that we're talking about for McConkey. But that was with Keenan Allen. I don't think he's going to be around in 2026 and beyond. That was only a one-year deal. I think it would make sense for them to move on, especially since this team already drafted Trey Harris out of Ole Miss in last year's draft on day 2, if I remember correctly. So I don't know. There's all sorts of things to kind of weigh, right? I think I did a decent job of outlining sort of the weird downside of Ladd McConkey, but also some of the potential upside with the incoming Mike McDaniel, and also his entire rookie season, folks. He was super good. We had a reason to be excited about Ladd McConkey entering last season anyway. So there goes my diatribe. Ladd McConkey is the player that I want to talk about. I am placing him as my wide receiver 12, just because I think he's going to get back to his old ways and get it done. Where do you have him, and how do you kind of feel about him and the rest of this Chargers offense with their potentially new look?
Yeah, we're going to differ a bit on this one, Herms, because essentially the way that I'm looking at Ladd McConkey is, first season he was the wide receiver 12 overall. Last season, you know, about wide receiver 29, depending if you're in like half PPR. So I'm kind of splitting the difference. I got him down at wide receiver 20. Okay, so this is kind of the case that I will lay out for you. He was wide receiver 12 his rookie year, wide receiver 29 his next year. But the issue for me is that, you know, the concern going into this year and how to replicate what we saw in his rookie year was, is he going to have as big a piece of the pie as he did? Because Ladd was the only game in town through the air his rookie year, right? There was really nobody else there. Keenan Allen was a bear, I'm quite certain. Gadsden wasn't there. Omarion Hampton wasn't there. Trey Harris wasn't drafted. It's just like he was the only game in town. And going into this next year, I was like, the targets are going to go down. I can't be in on him. Well, lo and behold, he had about the same slice of the pie, 112 targets. His rookie year, 106 targets next year. The issue was he was not as efficient with catching those. He had 82 catches to 66. Also, you know, we're talking about 1,150 yards his rookie year, didn't even eclipse 800. And then you look at the touchdowns, they're about the same. 7 touchdowns to 6 touchdowns. So really, he got the same slice of the pie. He got the same amount of touchdowns. You know, one is the difference here. You know, it's just this level of hyper efficiency I think we saw out of his rookie year, and then he just came back down to earth his sophomore season, right? So it's not like he's getting less targets, and it's not like he was scoring less touchdowns. It's just he was doing a heck of a lot less with the same amount his second year. So it makes me kind of think, like, what do we do with Ladd McConkey in that case? So for me, I'm kind of just splitting the difference, where I think the wide receiver 12 season he had as a rookie was just a crazy efficient outlier that we're not going to see again. But I can also kind of admit that it might not be as bad as it was last year in terms of 106 targets for only 66 catches. So I'm splitting the difference, Herms. It might be a little of a cop-out here, but he feels like a wide receiver 20 for me. He feels like a wide receiver 2. I don't think I am confident enough to talk about this guy being a clear cut wide receiver 1 on the fringe, that is. So for me, he sits at wide receiver 20. I'm pretty confident there. What does Keep Trade Cut got to say between where we have this discrepancy, bud?
Well, as it turns out, they're pretty much in between us. At wide receiver 16, he is listed at an equivalent trade value of a 2027 mid first round rookie pick. I think that's a pretty reasonable price. He's sitting there around guys like Roma Dunze just behind him at wide receiver 17, Garrett Wilson at wide receiver 15, just above him. I think that's a pretty appropriate range. And I think all things considered, even if I will admit, I am definitely just very bullish on what we saw from him to begin. And I think I'm a little bit maybe too forgiving of what happened with the Chargers toward the end of last year, because it does obscure some of the concerns that you were really bringing to the forefront about the fact that, like, he was still kind of meh at the beginning of the year too. Definitely something to consider. Is there anything that you could see from reports this offseason as we get into the summer portions and into training camp? Word out of Los Angeles about things with Mike McDaniel and his system that would cause you to be more confident in Ladd McConkey? Or are you just of the mindset, look, buzz is probably going to happen, but we really need to see it before we believe it?
Yeah, for me, it's to see it before I believe it. I just have a hard time believing that he's going to, you know, let's say he does everything he's supposed to do again in terms of getting, you know, well over 100 targets. He catches, you know, 6-7 touchdowns. I don't see him being as hyper efficient as he was. So he's just a wide receiver too for me. And that's just how I'm going to operate. I don't dislike the guy. He was a prospect that I was pretty out on, and you know, I've accepted that L, but at the same time, I'm not about to go crazy on the guy. And I think it's fair to say that maybe he's closer to 2025 Ladd McConkey than 2024. I'll just split the difference and kind of see where the chips fall.
Perfectly reasonable thing to do. That serves as a great segue for us to get into our next player, a perfectly reasonably good receiver. Just kidding. Chris Olave is a phenomenally talented receiver who has always been kind of stuck in a little bit of a weird situation down there with the New Orleans Saints. Quarterback play has never been consistent throughout his tenure in the NFL. We also had a season from him not too long ago in which concussions knocked him out for basically an entire half of the year. Bit of a lost season for him there. But hey, this past year and the combined efforts of what we got out of Tyler Shuck and also, what's that guy's name?
Spencer Rattler.
Spencer Rattler, yes. The dynamic duo of those two. Not exactly being the most, you know, world-beating quarterbacks, but Chris Olave got fed consistent volume, was able to put up very consistent wide receiver two-level numbers that would occasionally spike for even more. I think that he has a lot going for him, but I don't know. The Saints are kind of a weird team with a lot to parse through. They're still kind of rebuilding as they move out of salary cap hell from the Sean Payton era. Where are you feeling about Chris Olave in terms of just kind of like rankings? Who are some of the guys you maybe have him around? Just tell me all about your feelings.
Yeah, he's a really interesting one for me because he came into the league. Everyone really liked him, you know, first round pick. Kind of disappointed with wide receiver 25 finish, but certainly not enough to bury him. Played another full season his sophomore year, finished as a wide receiver 19. People were willing to kind of give him another shot because he did see 138 targets his sophomore year and finished at wide receiver 19. So, I mean, that's something. He's commanding volume. And then in 2024, I got to get the brain switched over, Herms. In 2024, he didn't play a lot, right? And that was a problem. So it was a big unknown going into 2025. He dropped down a lot of people's ranks just considering, hey, he hasn't really put an elite season together yet. He missed half a season. In the end of the day, we're kind of worried about those concussions. And he goes out and blows it out of the water, right? He kills it 156 targets, catches 100 of them, 1,163 yards and 9 touchdowns. Finishes as the wide receiver 6 overall. I currently have Olave at wide receiver 18 today, right? I looked at this rank and I thought to myself, I could be talked into moving him up a couple spots as I kind of like came to grips with reality here. But then again, you know, here's where I'm at with him. This is why I have him at wide receiver 18. All right. We saw two full seasons. He was wide receiver 25 and wide receiver 19. So I'm ahead of where he finished on those two. This last year, 156 targets. You know, I think that was a symptom of A, the Saints playing fast, which could stick around, but B, they're just not being another pass catcher in town. I expect the Saints to address that. There was just nowhere else to go with the football all season long. And Olave benefited from that. And it's great to see. But moving forward, I do not expect that to be the norm. I do not expect that to be the status quo. And we also saw a career high 9 touchdowns, right? So typically he's a 4 or 5 touchdown guy. Well, could he get to 9 again? Sure. But at the same time, does he score 9? I mean, he should be scoring 9 if he's getting 156 targets. That's fair. But I think things just really worked out for him. We had this conversation about Trevor Lawrence a couple weeks ago where I was like, I like the guy. He hadn't all put it together, but then everything happened all at once. I am not necessarily going to be betting on Olave to repeat a top 6, top 8, probably even top 10 season in 2025. I think everything just really went his way. He stayed healthy. There was no target competitions. The touchdowns kind of fell to him. While I like him a lot as a player, I think things are going to go well for him going forward. We could probably expect pretty consistent football from Olave, but I would not be surprised if he is not a top 10 player moving forward for next year and the years to come. Things just kind of worked out for Olave in 2025, and I don't want to hyper adjust too much. As keep in mind, you know, he was probably outside of people's top 24 going into the season. So I'm happy to adjust him, happy to move him up a decent amount from last season to this season in the dynasty ranks. But wide receiver 18 kind of feels right when you look at his entire resume, let's say.
I think that's extremely fair and also very much in line with how I feel about Chris Olave and frankly, how I have felt about Chris Olave for a pretty long time at this point. I think he is a very talented receiver. I liked him a ton coming out of college, but one of the issues with him is something that I highlighted in an article that I wrote like way back last summer, 2024 draft mistakes that we need to avoid in 2025. And I use Chris Olave as the talent over situation trap that people fall into sometimes because he hadn't really done it before. But people always kept pushing, oh, but he's so good. He's going to get all this volume. It's going to work out. And it did eventually in his 4th season. But it took all the way up until then for folks to be proven right about that. And I am also not going to super over-adjust anything based off of him finally putting it together. And the fact that the Saints still don't have all of their situation figured out on offense either. We don't know if this little stretch that we got out of Tyler Shuck is going to be something that we can expect moving forward throughout all of next season. I'm not super confident in it either. That's why I have Chris Olave moved up in the wide receiver 20 spot. I think that's pretty respectful, sure. But I'm not going to go too much farther. But yo, guess where Keep Trade Cut has this man?
I mean, it's reactionary, Herm. So I'm going to say like wide receiver 13.
So close. Ah, wide receiver 14 in the same ballpark. 2027 mid first round rookie pick. Now, the interesting thing to me here is that he is in the same ballpark as the aforementioned Garrett Wilson, former college teammate at wide receiver 15, but then also at wide receiver 13, we got like Rashee Rice. I, at least when it comes to Rashee Rice, I would much rather have him
yes.
over Chris Olave.
Without a doubt. Like, without a doubt. Yes, man. I have Rashee Rice up at wide receiver 9. Maybe we should talk about him sometime, but I mean, I love Rashee Rice, dude. Dude's crushing.
Yeah, it's being in the ballpark of some of these names, I don't know. It is a little bit too rich for my blood, definitely for yours as well. I hope things continue to go well for Chris Olave, but I'm not willing to pay that high of a price. But look, if you can get some sort of deal done to maybe move off of Chris Olave and get yourself a nice little package tier down, maybe that's something to explore. That could be something kind of fun. But there is another really interesting name at receiver who is in the ballpark of Chris Olave that I want to bring up so badly because he is the next name on our list of guys to talk about. But we should probably take a commercial break before we do so. So sit tight, everybody. The Crossing Routes podcast will return after a brief word from our sponsors. Don't go anywhere. Yo, yo, yo. How's it hanging? CH Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes podcast here to ask you a question. Have you wanted to get in on some NFL action, but don't live in a state that has a sports book? Well, we have great news. Our newest partner, Novig, is America's number one sports prediction market.
offering better odds than sportsbooks in over 35 states. If you're looking to tail some of our plays for the NFL playoffs and all sorts of other sports, new players on Novig can get a free month of an FTN GOAT subscription when they sign up and use promo code FTN with their first purchase. Plus, you'll get 50% off your first purchase up to $25 in Novig cash. All you gotta do is download the Novig app, enter code FTN before making your first purchase of $50 or less, and the discount will automatically apply. Also, your promo code for that free month of an FTN GOAT tier will be in your email inbox before you know it. What a deal! We look forward to having you play on Novig with us this year. Be sure to check it out and use that promo code FTN.
Welcome back to the Crossing Routes Podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. I am still Herms. He is still Tyler Rowe, and we are still digging into the wide receiver landscape across Dynasty, across the NFL, and talking about some key names that people just need to be thinking a little bit more about as we get deeper into the off season. And that name that I was just so eager to talk about, because I can't believe that this guy and Chris Olave are so close together in rankings, is Tampa Bay Buccaneers Emeka Egbuka. Dude, I know it was a nightmare at the end of the year for people. After Baker Mayfield injured his shoulder in that game against the Rams, things got a little bit gross for the Bucs, and Egbuka kind of disappeared. He was a bit of a pain in the ass to carry on playoff fantasy rosters, but yo, those early season returns, absolute money. He really went out there and absolutely dominated. He did pretty well, at least during the early parts of the season when Mike Evans was also out there with him, healthy as well. So I think the fact that Egbuka was immediately able to step up, establish a role in this offense, and put up very awesome fantasy relevant numbers kind of just makes up for the fact that the back half of the year didn't go well for him. The back half of the year didn't go well for anybody on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I'm really not that worried about it. I have him currently as my wide receiver 17, but that is only because with him, that part of the list I haven't really updated. I think I am going to get him closer up into maybe the high-end wide receiver 2 range. I don't think I want to put him as a bona fide top 12 guy yet, but I could reasonably see him somewhere maybe around like 14 or 15 for me. Do you feel similarly about Egbuka? Also, did what we saw in the back half of last year scare you at all? Or are you kind of leaning more in my direction where it's like, hey man, he was awesome at the beginning of the year. We get why it went poorly. Emeka Egbuka is awesome.
Yeah, I'm more with you here, Herms. For me, it's like, yeah, things did not end up great. That's fair. But I think it's not called like the halo effect, but like whatever the reverse halo effect is, where like basically, you know, the halo effect is like when you think positively about a person because something happened recently and it went well, right? The opposite of that, it's like you think negatively about a person because it was more recent and it didn't go well. And that's essentially what's happening with Emeka Egbuka here. So I have him currently ranked at 14, which sounds like, you know, it's kind of what you were just talking about. Wide receiver 14 feels pretty good. You know, he was a top five wide receiver for maybe not the first half of the season, but like the first 40% of the season. Like, for me as a rookie, for him to do that out of the gate as a rookie, I mean, usually as a rookie, you get that kind of blow up towards the end of the season, not the beginning. That he was able to do that as a rookie right out of the gate, can't ignore it, man. I can't ignore it. Evans is a free agent. He's not getting any younger. Godwin, you know, he seems like he's still going to be a factor, but certainly doesn't look like he used to, and he's getting older. For me, it's just he looks to be the future of this franchise, and I'm with you on the Mayfield injury, as it did look like Mayfield was not playing 100%. Just a lot really went against him. Things, you know, the ball wasn't going to him as much. He wasn't catching the ball as much. You can argue it's his fault or Baker's fault. I'll listen to either side of it, but a lot just really went wrong in that back half of the season for Egbuka, where I don't want to overreact too much, right? So first half of the season, he's roughly like a top, let's say first half of the season, top 10 wide receiver. Back half of the season, like outside of the top 36. So I'm probably going to land a little bit more in the middle, but be a little more optimistic because I'm like, hell, dude, I've seen him be an elite wide receiver. And elite wide receiver, even for it was a short period of time, can't get out of my head, Herms. I know he's capable of that. And I don't want to be out on the guy. So I guess I'm interested to see where the market has him, because he's definitely a guy that I don't know if I want to be hyper aggressive on, but I don't want to completely miss out on either. So being at market or around market with Mbuka to me is somewhat important.
I think he's in a pretty interesting spot. He's at the wide receiver 12 at the equivalent pick value roughly of a 2026 early first. I mean, that sounds a little bit rich, but I mean, for the guy that we're talking about, I could see a scenario, if, as long as it's not like one of the top two or three picks or something, maybe you could talk yourself into that. And also, like, one other thing I really want to highlight for listeners is that offensive coordinator Josh Grizzard, no longer around. They definitely looked a little bit worse without Liam Cohen when he departed to become the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach. But the guy they have coming in now is Zach Robinson, who was with the Atlanta Falcons, who once upon a time himself was one of those people from the Sean McVay coaching tree. He was with the Rams on their staff before he got signed over to Atlanta, and he is now going to be in Tampa. And that is one of the things that he has in common with Liam Cohen, these McVay guys. They're going to be able to plug in back into what should be very relatively similar stuff to what they were doing to begin with. And I think Zach Robinson and what we saw out of that offense, once we kind of grade them on a curve a little bit for the quarterback position in Atlanta, was pretty good. Does that change in the offensive coordinator position inspire any confidence for you?
Certainly doesn't hurt Herms. I think I don't mind talking, you know, coaching and offensive coordinator changes, and they certainly do matter in some instances. But I'll be honest, like, I'm definitely not at a point where I'm taking those into account just yet, as I'm not as familiar. I haven't dove deep into into the coaching or offensive coordinator changes and trying to understand what they mean for the year to come. So, I mean, I certainly love what you laid out there, Herms, but for now, just kind of keeping it to what I know. It's like the player takes, reacting to the year, looking at maybe who could be leaving the team and who's not. I'm excited to dive a little bit deeper there, but I don't want to get too ahead of my skis.
Hey, if you want to start your journey in catching up with some of that stuff, you can check out my article from ftnfantasy.com last week, in which I break down all of the head coaching hires and give some feedback on what it could mean for fantasy football. Talk about a fun plug randomly in the middle of the show. More FTN content is the best way to do things. I think that puts a nice bow on the Amika Igbuka conversation. I mean, like, I think honestly, like, where they have him in the market is close enough to where we have him. I think it's pretty comfortable to say that we are just generally vibing with where the dynasty community is at as far as he goes. But I'm not entirely sure that is the case with the next name. This guy that I wanted to bring up specifically for more of an open conversation, because I'll just be straight up, I don't really have a ranking that is concrete that I have to share for Arizona Cardinals wideout Michael Wilson. But what I can tell you is that he was absolutely nuts toward the end of last year. Now, I have some stats pulled from week 11 onward and how Michael Wilson ranked among receivers. Now, this includes week 18 because it's a game that they played and it counts for the record books and all the stats and stuff. So just keep that in mind. From week 11 onward, Michael Wilson was the wide receiver 2 in PPR points per game, averaging 11 targets, 7 catches, and 96.9 receiving yards per game. In this window, he was 12th in yards per route run at 2.6, tied with George Pickens, is credited with 0 drops, had a league-leading 141 air yards per game, and his weighted opportunity rating of 0.70 was second only to JSN at 0.76 in that time frame. Michael Wilson was an absolute dog, but that was in the context of the Cardinals' entire backfield exploded, and they really just had to throw the ball constantly to keep up. That was with Jacoby Brissett at quarterback and not Kyler Murray. We actually have no idea who is going to be the quarterback of this Cardinals team in 2026, moving forward with their new head coach, Mike LaFleur, brother of Matt, the head coach in Green Bay with Packers. And then the other thing that I'll add is that Marvin Harrison Jr. was barely healthy for any of it. So how much can we really take away from Michael Wilson at all? And I want to just, I'm going to rip the Band-Aid off. Normally we save the keep, trade, cut valuation thing after I turn it over to you, but I'm just going to say, He is currently sitting as the wide receiver 29. And some of the names that he is floating around are some names that I think are very intriguing and names that I personally would rather have probably all of them over Michael Wilson. That's Ricky Pearsall at wide receiver 30, just below him. Jordan Addison at wide receiver 28, just above him. And then if you go a little bit further up, we get into names like Jaylen Waddle. I don't know, man. I said all the good things about Michael Wilson, but then I said all of the bad things about the context and how it's so tricky to trust. Are people getting a little bit carried away with this?
Maybe a little bit. I'm at wide receiver 34 right now, so I'm a little bit lower than that, but not terribly low. Listen, he was wide receiver 60 and then wide receiver 59 in his third year. He saw a breakout, finishes as wide receiver 10. He was a legitimate waiver wire winner, league winner kind of guy. But we also have two seasons where he just didn't stick out and wasn't a difference maker. I don't know. Was it Brissett? Or what was going on here? God, I don't even know what to say to you, man. This is an anomaly. This is a tough one. I'm okay being a little bit below the consensus on Michael Wilson just because, like, is he a true third-year breakout? Maybe. But, man, it was like one of those seasons where I really don't know what to think just yet. So I'm okay with kind of admitting that I don't feel confident in the Michael Wilson rank. I knew I'd be a little bit below consensus. I'm comfortable being, five spots, six spots, depending. I've shifted him already once, but in that range. So I wish I had more to add here. I think I definitely got to think on it more. I almost want to see what kind of happens in Arizona to really kind of lock in. So as long as I'm around consensus, I think I'm okay. But it's definitely an interesting case and one I'm going to have to dive into here deeper as the offseason goes on.
That's probably the sound way to approach this. And for me, I'll put it this way. For me to feel good about Michael Wilson, I basically need like one thing to happen and one thing only. Jacoby Brissett comes back and just is the bridge guy for all of next year. And we feel confident that, like, hey, at least it's a quarterback that he's familiar with now, that he has worked with and had success with. But even then, like, that's still so nebulous because the Kyler Murray contract is huge. Them moving off of it is going to be such a complicated thing to do to begin with that, kind of like you were saying, we have to just be in wait and see mode before we get into anything deeper with Michael Wilson or really ranking a lot of the Cardinals in general outside of Trey McBride, because obviously he's going to be good basically no matter what happens. But, you know, exceptions prove the rule. Now we can get into our final player here, and I want to be high on Luther Burden. I really do. I think he's a fun player. He was super cool, especially once we got into the back half of the season. Roma Dunze had a bit of a foot issue. We got to see his teammate, the rookie out of Missouri, end up stepping up and really take on a much larger role. But this breakout that we saw from him is a sample size of essentially three games. I think people are getting a little bit carried away when it comes to the whole Luther Burden thing. I like him. I wrote about him a ton in season. I really do think he is going to be a talented receiver, but as far as things stand right now, I'm not moving him anywhere above my wide receiver 30 spot. And if I do, maybe it'll be with a little bit higher, but not inside the top 24. That is kind of the mark that I'm putting it at. I'm not ready to just call him a wide receiver too, especially because Odunze is still around. Presuming he ends up getting healthier and is able to build some sort of rapport eventually with Caleb Williams that is going to be consistent, he's going to be a factor. And that's not even talking about the much greater sample size we got out of tight end Colston Loveland being a super brilliant pass-catching weapon in this offense. So those just are my feelings on the whole Luther Burden situation. I know people are going to have him ranked a lot higher than I do. I kind of understand why, but I've already stated my case. Are you one of the people that is also really in on Luther Burden? And where do you have him in your rankings?
Help me out here. Where is he ranked to keep trade cut? Just tell me off the rip here.
At the equivalent trade value of a 2028 early first round pick, wide receiver 21.
Yeah, I mean, you take that pick and you run, okay? I have him at wide receiver 28 right now, and quite frankly, probably too high. We need to be realistic with ourselves. This is ridiculous what we're doing here, folks. We're talking about a guy who was outplayed by Olamide Zaccheaus, who played not even a third of his team snaps in 2025, okay? He eclipsed 60% snap share in one game all season. Everyone wants to talk about, oh my God, his yards per route run are so high. He doesn't even, there's not enough sample size here, folks. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Nope.
He has played a third of the snaps, a third. What are we doing here? What are we doing? Laviska Shenault had a better rookie season than Luther Burden, who is my comp for Luther Burden, by the way, is Laviska Shenault. People might think I'm crazy, but please watch the tape. It's very, very similar what they're able to do.
I mean, hey.
And Laviska had a better breakout season, a better rookie season than Luther Burden. And now we're going to anoint him towards the top. Man, I would sell my Luther Burden shares and run. If I can get a first for the guy, I'm absolutely doing it. You laid it out perfectly. First of all, Colson Loveland proved to be the absolute alpha when he broke out. Romo Dunze gets healthy. He's better than Luther Burden. Sure, DJ Moore might not be around. That's fine. We'll see who's there playing wide receiver. There's just too many mouths to feed for us to get excited about Burden. He's just really not that good of a route runner, man. There were so many times when I was like watching Caleb Williams and I was like, God damn, what is Caleb doing? That was a terrible thrower. He throws an interception and I go back and watch the tape and he's throwing the ball to Luther Burden, who's running the wrong route. Man, I don't really, this is an interesting case because I'm not high on him. I don't want to be high on him. I want to be well below market. I don't have a single share of him because if I did, I would have already flipped him and sold him. He's not a very good wide receiver. He's a better athlete. People are insane for being this in on Luther Burden, a guy who finishes the wide receiver 50 and played a third of his team's snaps, never eclipsing 60% in a single game and getting played by Olamide Zaccheaus. So, I mean, I'll rest my case there, man. I feel pretty passionate about this one. I think people are getting really crazy and ridiculous with Luther Burden because he finished decently strong. So, man, I could go on all day. I'm going to let her rest.
Yeah, I'm all for being excited on the potential here. I'm all for people being excited about limited sample sizes, provided that they are honest about what they're talking about and what we're looking at. And I just don't think that we got enough dominance out of him from a long enough stretch of time to be able to say, oh yeah, this is definitely going to work. Because I'm not saying this because it's something that I think, but a lot of people love to run with the very convenient Amon-Ra St. Brown parallels because Ben Johnson and the blah, 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 and the commonality that they have there. But even with Amon-Ra's rookie season, it was also a short window, but it was a span of like 5 or 6 weeks where he was playing constantly. He was establishing a pretty high rep share. He was getting the ball a ton and he was actually doing it. It wasn't this sort of like ticky-tacky limited thing where even within this breakout that people look at, like Luther Burden didn't even always go off. That was one of the things that was so frustrating during the fantasy playoffs. It's like we kept looking for these windows. It's like, okay, this could be a week, right? Oh, you could start him in your flex. Maybe this, he could maybe clear wide receiver two numbers and he did okay. He returned something for you, but it wasn't like the huge burst that you really needed. We only got a very, very tiny amount of him truly breaking out. It's exhausting. I'm with you. I don't know. Maybe this is just going to have to be our crusade throughout the offseason. Just go around and yelling at people about Luther Burden. I'm perfectly fine to start that as just a bit that you and I both do. Why not? This is the anti-Luther Burden podcast. No, I'm kidding.
Just, let's not go that far. Pro-Jackson Dart podcast and an anti-Luther Burden podcast.
You know what you're getting here with the crossing routes, folks. Oh my gosh, man, what a fun show. What a fun conversation for us to have. This is always one of my favorite things to do every week. And I hope, listeners, it's one of your favorite shows to listen to every single week. If you like what you hear, tell your friends, leave a 5-star review on whatever platform that you are downloading this from, and make sure you tune in next week when we have our larger conversation on another subject for another time. So that is going to be the end of our program. We will see you all next week here on the Crossing Routes podcast. Adios. Think about-